everyone. Welcome back to Rewatchable. We're on episode 132, recapping The Legend of Korra, book 4, seasons 3 and 4. So that's the coronation and the calling of the final season of Legend of Korra. If you want to get in touch with us on the podcast to talk about Legend of Korra or any of our past shows, to add feedback for upcoming episodes or just talk to us in general, you can reach us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can comment on hyperball.com on the podcast page where we live. Or you can join us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. For all the best reaction gifts in the business, in my opinion, anyway. So, going into book 4, our team today is myself. I am the host this week. I'm a super fan. My name's Natalie. And we have super fan Donya, newbie Ariana, and newbie Brittany. So, as we have taken up the custom of doing, we'll talk for a moment about what we're all doing this week, fun fact based on a theme so that you get to know our voices if it's the first time that you're tuning in. It's Halloween, so we're going to talk about that. It's actually the morning after Halloween now for me. It's 1st of November, but whatever, because we get everything early. The only ways that I celebrated Halloween were by baking some really, 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 really orange cookies with chocolate in them and then eating them. I also did walk up the main street to drop off a key for someone, and I saw a lot more people in costume than I expected because Halloween is not that big deal in Australia. But I guess it's a weekend and an excuse for people to play, so I guess some people got into it this week, but this year. It's not very common for people to get into it here. So, yeah, does everyone want to go through and say how they feel about Halloween this year or what they're doing?
Sure. I'm going to a party tonight with my best friend, and she is Harley Quinn, and I'm the Joker. Oh. So I spent the entire day looking for green hair dye, like driving around. That was smart to do it actually on Halloween at the last minute, but I did find it finally, so that was exciting.
Cool. I'm Brittany, and I'm doing nothing. I don't like Halloween. I can't wait for it to be over so I can start listening and getting ready for Christmas. Yeah, so I've just been handing out some candy to some trick-or-treaters. Everyone has been really cute. I haven't had any, you know, annoying teens come to my door, so pumped about that. Lots of cute babies and parents dressing to theme with their children, which I appreciate, and that's all I've been doing.
Brittany,
and I might be running around during this podcast still answering the door.
Tell us why you don't like Halloween, just out of curiosity. Can you fit that in a sentence or anything?
I've been asked that a lot, and I never liked it. I remember protesting dressing up, like, even from a young age, but I guess, like, if I had to pick one awful Halloween memory, it would be when my mom dressed me up like the Beanie Baby platypus, which, as most of you know, is purple, and it was very hot that Halloween, and I had this purple felt costume on with these, like, big giant stuffed flipper hands and a big beak on my head, and I didn't even win the school costume contest, so I'm still bitter about that. That was in third grade in 1998. Still upset.
Sorry about that.
Oh, Brittany. Halloween is over for me. Hi, I'm Donya. I'm making my very rare appearance on the podcast. I've been out all day at a theme park. That's what I've done for Halloween. Not particularly Halloween-y themed, but there was a roller coaster called Vampire, so I guess that counts.
Were they doing anything for Halloween? I saw the poster thing, like, you know, the sign entering the park. Were they not?
They had, like, pumpkins and stuff around, and loads of kids were, like, dressed up, and they had, like, a little face paint stand, but otherwise, from what I could see, there wasn't really much else other than, like, the random pumpkins everywhere.
So it's no, like, crazy Disney nonsense or anything like
no.
that?
Yeah. No. Okay. This enough. Is Britain. It's very conservative with how it celebrates its holidays sometimes. We but don't
for
go
Christmas,
all that Disney.
You guys are pretty crazy.
We do get a little crazy for Christmas, it's true.
Let me just say something about British Christmas. I don't want to go on too much of a tangent here, but British Christmas is freaking depressing. I'm not saying, people have a nice time, they have the fire and whatever, but, like, everything about British Christmas, like, the way they advertise it, like, all of the, like, Christmas ads, you know, all of the Christmas television specials, they're all, like, really melancholy. Like, it's this really... Christmas is really depressing in the UK.
And then someone always dies on Downton Abbey,
yeah,
so...
Doctor Who Christmas specials are always sad. They're never fun. But in general, throughout nearly all of time, it's always been this, like, weirdly sad, like, oh, life sucks, but I guess we're all here together, like, situation. Like, the ad campaigns, like, what's the...
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Like, what is the freaking, you know what I'm talking about, Danya. Why do they do it?
I don't know.
Why, rather than being like, oh my god, Christmas! It's kind of like this really introspective, sad holiday, and it's really strange.
Well, I think before I went to study abroad over there, I read somewhere that, like, per person, that... like, Britain as a whole has the highest, like, depression rate, like, percentage per person. Mm-hmm. And they said it's because of the weather is really depressing. But it's, like, always...
The weather is really depressing. Mm-hmm. I will say that. I don't know. All of the adverts at Christmas make me cry. So,
there's this one department store that, like, competes with itself on a yearly basis to put out, like, John the most Lutz. Depressing ad in the entire... Anyway.
Yeah, I watch those when I need to feel sad. Yeah. The one with the bear and the Somewhere Only We Know song.
Yeah, that's it.
It's so the same good. Company every year, more depressing ad.
John Lewis.
Yeah, John
Go
Lewis.
Go and look them up. Look them up on YouTube. It's... If you want to cry, just go and watch the John Lewis Christmas ads.
It's very strange, but, you know, we'll start moving into Christmas territory in the future, and we'll move on from that now. So, the coronation, episode 3 of season 4. Oh god, Mitch, twincest. I did think we were going to go there. Okay.
Okay. This episode though was heavy on the twincest. Okay. Even I was like,
yeah,
ooh.
It was.
I know. We'll talk about it in a moment. Okay. So, a strong start to the show. In this chapter, Cora trains under Toph Beifong in the foggy swamp while Prince Wu's power is crushed by Kavira and twincest is nearly confirmed. All of the world leaders are back in town to see Wu's coronation, but when Kavira steps up and declares that the United Empire will continue to fall under her dictatorship, Su gets pissed off. Knowing that Zhaofu is the last stronghold in the Earth Kingdom, Kavira confronts the metal-bending matriarch with the threat that if any of the world leaders attempt to stop Kavira, they'll be met with extreme force. Meanwhile, Varric conducts experiments on spirit vines. Toph may be blind, but she can see Korra's inhibitions from a mile away. Ooh. The blind bandit tells our avatar that there's no way to remove the remaining mercury from such a tensed-up body. So, yeah, intro to, you know, where we left off last week was Korra discovering that she'd found Toph hiding out in the swamp, you know, choosing to absent herself from society because everyone she knows sucks. And yeah, so that's where we left her in last week's episode. Now we're here, much tough time and a proper introduction to Prince Wu, the planned Earth leader, versus Kavira, the not so planned Earth leader. So, okay, twincest, I guess, if we're going to go there. The twins aren't dead. Apparently Mitch only thought this, that they were dead the other week because he forgot that they came back. But they are potentially sleeping in the same bed unless we're meant to believe that half-hearted bathtub excuse. Now, I may joke...
I actually believe that.
No,
because he's so weird.
About the bathtub.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's 80% true, the bathtub thing, but also, like, that is really bizarre.
Yeah.
Though...
Literally in the second, like, between the two sentences when they were like, I think there's been a mistake, there's only one room with one bed, and just when she goes, there's no mistake, I'm like, oh my god, it's happening, and I thought they were just gonna, like, leave it there, like, that it was just gonna be, no, there's no mistake, and it was just gonna be, like, ambiguous twincest, but then they were like, no, it's more just a sign of, Esna, Eska, Desna. I don't remember how to say their name.
It's Desna. Desna's the one who sleeps
Desna's
in the bathtub.
Boy, yeah. The Eska just likes to oppress anything in her power. So, you know, if that can include making her brother sleep in a bathtub instead of getting him in his own room, then they're cool with that. But I really, the first time I saw it, I thought, in between the two sentences, I thought, oh my god, they're just going to drop that and just walk on and that's going to be it, and I was going to die. But unfortunately,
I think I have the proper mind that Nickelodeon is trying to reach. Like the 12-year-old, like, oh, of course you would sleep in the bathtub mind.
That's so funny, and we're all like, it's incest! Sorry, guys.
Fandom has corrupted us.
Look. Yeah, I have nothing to say.
Okay. I just assume all twins are sleeping together now after watching, like, so much TV. It's like, of course.
In what shows do you watch that twins sleep together?
Mostly just Game of Thrones. But...
Oh, yeah, that did happen, didn't it? I forgot. God, that was so long ago. I forgot about Game of Thrones. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's definitely been some cases for it in past years. You know, lots of fandoms with questionable sibling relationships. You know, that's another discussion, really.
Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Well, that, yeah. Supernatural, not twins, obviously. Glee, final season of Glee had a lot of incest jokes. That's a conversation for another time, really, about, like, what it means to see certain... the way that we interpret, you know, certain relationships and closeness with people and why we must... you know, push sexual or romantic connotations onto very strong bonds. But we'll move on from that. So, Prince Wu. We've had the bold statement made here that Prince Wu kind of deserves to have the throne ripped right out from under him. Is this fair or unfair? So, Brittany, first of all, how do you feel about Wu, and do you think that he deserves to not be king purely because he sucks? I mean, because that's kind of not how monarchies work. It's like you're just sort of stuck with who you got. But do you like him? Do you hate him? Do you want Kaveri to crush him, or do you want him to succeed?
I'm kind of indifferent to Wu. I think he's good for comedic relief. I don't think he deserves to be king, but like you were saying, like, it's a monarchy.
No one deserves to be king. Yeah. Like, how does that even work, you know?
But then, like, last week I was talking about how I assumed that someone wanted him on the throne just because they wanted a pawn within the system, but now that's kind of been kiboshed because Kuvira is just like, well, we'll put him on the throne, but, like, you know, that's not actually what's going to happen. Like, this week she came in and was like, yeah, no, forget that. So... I don't know how I feel. Like, I feel bad for him now because either way, like, if they just put him on the throne, I think he would have been less of a problem than he is not on the throne. You know what I mean? Like, she probably could have done more if she was working this whole thing while people believed that there was a king, you know, doing something, even if he's completely inefficient. But I think I said this last week, like, he's, like, the type of... he's, like, another Varric that we don't really need on the show. Like, he's trying too hard to be this Varric character.
I kind of think he's funny, though. I like how he, like, is so obsessed with Mako.
Oh, yeah, no.
I love his relationship with Mako.
Yeah, I think he's funny, but I don't want him to be abusing Mako the rest of the season. I want Mako to have a little bit more agency in his job.
Oh, but I finally like Mako. I'm, like, so obsessed with new Mako. It's a problem. I don't know what happened. I used to hate him. Now I'm, like, crushing so hard. Wow. So.
So, I mean, at this point, I do like Wu. I think he's cute and ridiculous. You know, I think that his whole pampered, you know, expectations about his coronation, I think it's fun. He doesn't, like... I don't want to, like, smack him in the face. Like, if he had just a tinge more of, like, arrogance. Like, did any of you watch Jane the Virgin? Ariana, you...
Yes.
He's like Rogelio.
My favorite. It's my favorite show ever.
Well, Wu is, yes, like Rogelio. Like, he has that... he's terrible, but it's, like, it's from a really good place. And so I kind of like him for that. But anyway, we'll move on from that. Ariana, let's start a podcast about Jane the Virgin. Anyway.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. All right. Kaveri, can we see things from the perspective of the Kaveri supporters in this power switch, about the power switch being a good thing? Like, Donya, when you first watched it, like, you know, this kind of takeover, it was kind of almost really subtle, I guess. Like, you know, she's doing this job that she was assigned to do. She took it too far. And then even right there at the coronation, there are, like, people openly supporting her. Like, how do you think that works? So do you think it's as understandable at this point as, say, we were with the Equalists originally? You know, we were kind of like, hey, maybe it is, you know, fair for people not to be, you know, to have equal footing in terms of power. How did this situation, you know, feel initially, or is it obviously too dictatory?
Oh, it's obviously too dictatory. Like, it's, and even the first time round when I was watching it, I was like, this is a very clear dictatorship kind of narrative that they're going with. And a lot of the people under her power either being quite naive to that. And it obviously, with the kind of wartime theme that they have going through the entire season, like, it has very direct, like, parallels to certain other dictatorships during war that kind of went on. So I don't know, it just, she, it's kind of, for me, I just never got on board with, like, understanding.
It wasn't like, oh, this thing is good, and then, oh, actually no, it's not good, it's been taken too far.
I hate to, like, I feel like Hitler is bringed up for everything, like, brought up for everything, but so I hate to be that person. But
she does,
she does kind of remind me of Hitler. Like, you know how Germany, like, was in a terrible place after World War One, and then he came around and he was like, I'm going to fix everything. And then he, like, did. But then, you know, he became a terrible, horrible person who killed everybody.
Yeah, it's like Kavira was probably on the cover of Time magazine a few years before she started, you know, like, you know, killing people. So, yeah.
Yeah,
that was a thing that happened with Hitler, for anyone that doesn't know. Like, for a while, legitimate world, rest of the world thought that he was good, and then he took power. So watch all your world leaders, because you don't know when one of them's going to turn around and do that. That's not creepy. Okay.
Okay, can we talk about, though, how bizarre that was? Like, okay, the thing with Kuvir, that would have made sense to me if they had been doing the coronation, like, actually in the Earth Kingdom, like, Ba Sing Se, because then all of her people would have been around. But then she gets up there, she has all of the world leaders, and she's just like, actually, I'm in power. And everybody just sits there, and it's like,
Oh, was that Zuko's daughter? Have we seen her yet?
Yeah, that's her.
Okay,
that's,
there was three gang babies on stage at the same time.
Yeah, her name's Azumi, and yeah, she's cool. And she wears
Azumi. Oh my god, that's so
Azumi?
Great.
Azumi.
That's the greatest thing ever.
And she wears little nerdy glasses, and she's the Fire Lord. So yeah.
See, Zuko did love Azula in some deep, dark place of his heart.
I thought you were going to take that to an incest place again.
No!
They're going to be like, it's their daughter!
Totally with Katara.
Not everything is incest, guys.
Okay, well, look, all right, let's... Anyway. Okay. So, yeah, Brittany, anything to say about Kavira, her weird takeover?
You know, I'm not really a fan of hers still. I'm kind of feeling her out. She's another one, though, like you were saying earlier, like, and Toph kind of points this out too, like, where you see their point of view and you're like, okay, that's fine, but you are one step too far. Like, I would agree with you and the work that you're doing and everything, but I don't think your face needs to be on posters in the town that you conquer. You know, so, and I feel bad for Bolin, because I really think deep down he thinks he's doing the best thing that he knows how to do, and he doesn't want to give that up because it feels good. Like, you know, he's happy to be helping people and all that jazz, but he is in a little too much, you know.
Yeah,
Bolin is too old to be this naive anymore. He's been through too much. I mean, he's still playing, like, the sweet dumb guy card. It's just, I'm so over it. I'm done. Like,
he should be more cynical by now.
What is he doing? He's getting up. He's, like, standing up and clapping. I was like, sit your ass down, Bolin. Like, what are you doing?
But, I mean, even when Mako is talking to Wu about it, and he's like, he explains what Kuvira is doing, like, as he gets, like, Wu out of there.
Yeah.
And he is, like, explaining it to her, and he's like, well, actually, I don't really see anything wrong with it, but there is something wrong with it. Like, he can't even put his finger on it. So I kind of don't blame Bolin at this moment,
because even Mako, when he has to explain it, he's just like, oh, I just know she's bad. But
Lin is a grown-ass man. He should be able to see that he... Okay, how many dictators have they, like, battled?
I have plenty.
You can't see this coming?
No, he can't. He has those rose-colored glasses that he just can't take off.
Yeah, it's not like she's really hiding it. Though, I mean, we're going to find out, like, you know, at some point in these two episodes, I can't remember which episode it is, but someone says, you know, I've seen what... It's Sue. Sue's like, I've seen what you do to the towns that you conquer, and Kavira's like, then you know what's coming for Zhaofu. Let's point out, it's a semi-mild spoilery, that Bolin doesn't see Kavira as that bad because he doesn't necessarily know what happens after the train leaves, if you know what I mean. They go through, they do their work on the train. Bolin is kept thinking that it's good because he is unaware of what they actually do. I mean, you haven't seen what they actually do either, but I'll say that what Sue said to Kavira is stuff that Bolin doesn't know about, which... does suck, but how many innocent people, you know, are there in big corporations that don't realize, like, all of the dodgy stuff that's going on? Captain America the Winter Soldier is a great example of that happening. I'll drag that into anything that I possibly can. I don't know how much what Bolin's role in all of this is. You know, he seems to be, you know, up there advising, you know, helping her in the inner circle or whatever at all times. But
yeah, but he's not like Varric building something for her to use. But then again, I also don't think that Varric realizes what he's doing because he's just an idiot.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the difference between them. Okay. It's like Varric, it's like the way that I can appreciate Slytherins. Like, okay, like I can appreciate Voldemort more than I can appreciate Wormtail. They're both terrible people, but Voldemort was at least, like, you know, being proactive about his mission. Versus, like, Wormtail is just kind of like, well, this is what I'm doing, I guess.
Are you saying that Bolin is like Wormtail?
in this situation, obviously not. Bolin is so much better than Wormtail. I like Bolin.
I sort of get you.
But I'm just saying, like, Varric is at least being, like, you know, I'm choosing to do this for my own personal gain, and Bolin is just being dumb.
I get you. I do get you, I think. But we'll see. As I said, you're going to find out a lot, you know, more. I want to ask at this point, Kavira versus Zaheer. I wasn't in the season finale, obviously, of book three. I was away. But I still love Zaheer, even though he's, like, quite evil.
I do, too.
I love him. Like, I really... He's number one. Not only, like, my favourite villain, like, as... It's not like, ooh, I love his villainy. I love him as a character. I feel very strongly about him. Not that I necessarily thought he was, like, right. But anyway, the point is, Zaheer, you've got, you know, to the end of the season, proven that Zaheer 100% believes in what he's doing for a very spiritual purpose, no selfish gain, very higher purpose. How does that compare to what you vibe about Kavira? Do you think she believes in what she's doing, or do you think she's just, like, a selfish?
Kavira is a troll.
Yeah. Okay. That's it?
I like her. That. Yeah. No, that's actually pretty good. I like that description of Kavira.
Donya, at this point, anything to add? Does she believe in what she's doing, or is it selfishly motivated?
I don't know. I don't know that she, like, wholeheartedly believes in everything she's doing. I feel like there's a bit of selfishness to it. Like, it's almost she's got, like, a taste of power, and now she's like, no, but I want all of it. So...
Last week, I think, like, McCall was talking about how she, like, loves Kavira, and I remember just, like, listening and being like, why? This, to me, she seems like the worst kind of villain. She's a selfish person, but she's not even, like, she's not entertaining or fun to watch like Azula and Ozai. Like, she's just, like, she's boring and awful.
She's very different from ones that we've had before, I suppose, in her sort of calmness, and I guess, like, in person she would be played by someone like, I don't know, like Rachel Weisz or something, someone who just had this very, like, commanding, low-key presence, but I don't know how well that comes across in animation. Like, I get that kind of character working, like, with the kind of tone it can create in, like, a real-life situation, like in a play or a movie, but in animation I'm not 100% sure that what they were intending to do with the character, like, her whole vibe, like, comes across that well, if that makes sense.
She, I don't know, have we meant, I don't think we mentioned this earlier. Oh, well, Bolin, because this whole time she was just, like, rubbing me the wrong way. And I was like, why do I hate her so much? And then Bolin says something to, like, she's just like Cora. I don't know if that, I hope that was nobody's line. And I was like, yes, she is just like Cora. And then I was like, that's why I don't like her, probably.
Oh, God. All right, well, we'll move on from that. Well, we don't have to, but we can. So, Marco, you know, your new best friend, Ariana, continues to be emo about his assignment having to watch over Wu even after the coronation fails. And they go and have some street adventures, you know, in Republic City while they're figuring out what to do. So this was a fun little antic. And then we obviously see that people are already selling Kavira propaganda and all of that kind of stuff, which upsets them a fair bit. So, like, do you think Marco is on the right side in protecting Wu, or do you think he's wasting his time, or what's happening here with Wu and Marco? Anyone got any particularly strong feelings about this?
Well, I don't think he's wasting his time. I don't know if Marco is smart enough to figure out where he would go if he wasn't, like, assigned a task. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like
that's really true.
Oh, so, like, God. If he was just like, forget this, I'm done, he would be like, oh.
Marco is not a self-starter.
Should I call him?
None of these people are, except for Asami, obviously. Yeah, but yeah. The boys definitely are not.
Cora, 1,000% not a self-starter.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm so sorry. I keep interrupting, but I missed all of last week with the introduction. And there was, like, the big time jump. Okay, so, like, I think I did mention this in my recap, but I just find it so interesting that, okay, these are, like, the Avatar's best friends. They've saved the world, like, so many times, and, like, 3 years later, they're, like, still doing bitch duty. It's just so bizarre to me. Like, you know, after...
Like, promoted or anything?
Yeah, like, after the gang saved the world, these 12-year-olds were promoted to, like, really important positions. Yes.
And, like, Sokka became Cora's friends. Governor of the city and stuff, and Marco's like, yeah. I'm still a beat cop, like, you know.
Yes.
No, I get you. That's true.
I think maybe because they, like, started in their teens, they're a little more, like, self-conscious or something. I don't know what it's saying about these,
really,
what happened later on.
They lucked into it, you know? Okay. Katara, like, best waterbender ever. Toph, best earthbender ever. You know, like, these people were, like, the best ever. And Mako and Bolin were like, well, we were on a team with Korra once. And
yeah.
Like, that's kind of why they fell into it. Yeah, well, we both had a crush on her, so.
I guess we deserve stuff.
Also, is Pabu dead? Because we still haven't seen Pabu, and I'm a little nervous.
That would be a spoiler.
Okay, don't tell me then.
No, he has to come back. If he was dead, I feel like they would have said something.
Yeah. Like, yeah. We would have, like, a Bolin hand-drawn art picture of him framed in his little chambers.
Oh, my God.
That's just, like, too depressing. They can't kill him.
Oh, my God.
Is he dead?
Probably ate him. Like, I don't know.
At least we'll have a grave or something. Somebody will go visit. Bolin will go visit his grave. And he's like, I don't know what to do. I want to be loyal to Kavira, but Marco is so smart, and he's saying she's bad.
Oh, my God. Okay, the ghost of Pabu is not going to solve all your problems, so we're going to move on from that. Varric is doing experiments with spirit vines. Why? Why?
I don't know.
But... Well, no, that's not true. Actually, we know what the outcome is, but at this point, I don't think Varric really knows what he's doing. He's not got, like, a... He's just like, oh, someone's funding me to tinker around with stuff. I guess I'll do it. It's not like...
I'm sure it'll be a Deus Ex Machina at some point.
Wow. Ariana, you're good at interpreting things. Yeah, but you know, what are you expecting, like, to happen with the spirit vines, I guess? Like, what do you, any clue at all at what might the outcome of Varric's experiments be?
Sorry, was giving a skittle. and taking a skittle for myself. Yeah, I'm not sure what he's doing. I wish I did, because I feel like it's something bad, but he's just so excited to be like, yes, experiments on an awesome, like, with these vines and stuff like that. I don't know. I feel bad. I feel worse for, like...
I really didn't even notice, like, the thing with the vines.
Yeah,
I know. Like, if it like, hadn't been put in here, I would have totally forgot about them.
But then it's literally, like, 1 second at the end of the episode. The first episode where he...
Well,
like,
that's Mitch's lack of subtlety because, you know, he is... Him highlighting it here has shown you that it is going to be important, and I will tell you it is going to
be important. Well, I kind of figured it would be, but I thought it would happen in the next episode, but it doesn't.
Okay. Well, Spirit Vines, Experiments, Varric...
Keep it in the back of your mind.
Yeah. There's some things...
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
The next point is really fascinating, and okay. Makes me so happy.
Do you want to talk us through that one then?
Yes, well, Mitch wrote here that this episode was released the same weekend that Rewatchable was recording the Swamp episode.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so funny because in the Swamp episode, he sees the vision of Toph for the first time.
Yeah.
Oh. That just makes my heart grow.
Yeah. Now you've got some feelings.
And yeah, this was my first ever Korra spoiler that happened because the feature image for the article on Hypeable was Toph as an old woman.
Sorry. I want to talk about Toph, obviously. This is the main part of the episode for me. But yeah, Donya, first of all, do you have any sort of canonical knowledge about whether this swamp is the same swamp? Like, or if it's just a swamp?
I'm pretty sure it's the same swamp. Like, yeah. I always thought it was the same swamp. I never thought it was a different one. I always thought it was the same one because of the main tree.
Yeah.
With all of the vines that literally, like...
Yeah, I'd like to do it. I'm sure it's meant to be, but, you know.
Yeah.
So, Toph is my favourite of... She's not, like, my favourite character in all of Atla and Korra. But I do like her. But Toph is, I think, the one that translates the best from Atla to Korra, if that makes
sense. Yes.
I think that they've done the best job with her, you know, with getting, you know, a story for her and even the actor, you know, the speech patterns and the way that, like, this is the progression of that girl. In the same way that we kind of, you know, there were a lot, like, some of Zuko's speech patterns and the voice acting threw us off a little bit. We're like, that's not how he talks, but he's, like, 80 now, so maybe he's changed. This is still, you can see her personality in this character. It's the same person, the same speech patterns, you know, the same attitude, and it's just a really, I think it's the best adapted. It's like, because Katara, it's like, oh, you're just an old lady who's lived life. You could have been anyone. You're fine, but there's nothing about you that I'm going, that's Katara. That's so Katara. She doesn't have that much screen time, to be fair. Toph is Toph. Like, it's just perfect. And so I really love that they nailed that so well. So did anyone enjoy that or hate it?
That was something I was thinking about when I was watching the second episode. I was like, I'm glad that Toph I'm not exhausted by her yet. Because, like, I was nervous going into Korra thinking that some of, like, the Avatar throwbacks would be like, okay, that's enough of that. Like, I want to watch what, like, the Korra storylines are. How wrong I was. But then...
oh, Brittany, how naive.
But Toph was she's so great. Like, I could not get enough of her. I'm like, this is fantastic. So, yeah.
It made me want so badly to see Toph. Like, I want to see Toph and Zuko and Katara reunited, because I feel like that would give Zuko and Katara some personality. Because I think you're right, Natalie. Like, they just have not been really... I mean, I guess Zuko was... Towards the end, he did become very, like, zen and very, like, chill.
Yeah, and there were a few little moments Zuko had of being flustered in Korra, like, when he found out about Iroh, and I'm like, oh, that's you. I can see you in there.
Yeah, it was really in his face in that last scene when he was like, saw
that too. You animated him the same way. Like, that is the boy that I know. But I feel like them being together, like, you're right. Like, if it was, like, you know, Toph, Katara, and Zuko, like, hanging out, that maybe it would bring out, you know, you know how, like, we've talked about before that, like, you know, when you're with people that you've known for a long time, whether it's, like, siblings or, like, you know, just people you've known since you were a child, you really, like, regress to the same dynamics that you've always had with them. So seeing the original gang together as, like, old people, like, maybe we would have got some of that, but, you know.
Yeah, and I feel like, because Katara's defining characteristics were that she was, like, such an annoying, like, meddling mom, but, like, that doesn't really translate when you are, like, a mom.
Yeah,
and you're an old lady.
Yeah, she hasn't been that much of an annoying, meddling grandma. Like, she doesn't try to control, like, Tenzin's life or her, you know, grandchildren's life in the way that she tried to control everyone else's life, so...
But I feel like maybe if Toph was there, Toph would, like, call her out on it, and maybe... or maybe she would actually, like, get angry. I like it when Katara blows up and gets mad.
Okay, so Toph kind of flippantly said, when they discover that, you know, she's, like... One of the big traits about her has always been like, yeah, like, duh, you don't know that this thing is going on. I'm blind and it's so obvious to me, which I, you know, is something that to me I kind of still enjoy, or I sort of enjoyed seeing it brought back. But she says that, you know, the mercury poisoning is still in Korra. And Korra was like, oh, my God, I thought that Sue got it all out. And Toph kind of flippantly goes, ah, you know, my girl's never really picked up metal bending properly. And, you know, Mitch here has written, like, is Toph just being inadvertently unpleasable, or would anyone who's not her, the inventor of the art, always be lesser, like, objectively, like, no matter what? So, I don't know, like, how did you take this statement? Did you see it as just like, oh, grumpy Toph? Or, you know, did you see it?
I thought it was hilarious. Such a Toph thing to say.
Because obviously we've had these two, you know, these seasons of, like, Lynn being this, like, amazing, like, agile, like, you know, police officer who's, you know, doing wonderful things. And, like, Sue
built a city.
Inventing this whole metal bending city. And Toph's like, they never really got it, if you ask me.
But it explains so much about the girls.
Yes,
and the way
that's what
and
I was
all of their say. Issues.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it's the perfect blend of, like Lynn got, like, all the hardness, and, like, Sue got kind of, like, the
all
softer
the
side, but then, like, when Toph says it, it's, like, sarcastically funny, I took it as, so it's kind of, like, the two of them melded together, but, like, you could just see, when I heard Toph speaking like that, I was just like, oh my God, it just explains Sue and Lynn so much.
Yeah,
it made me feel like it would be so difficult having her as a mother, because I can see how Lynn would feel like she's never, like, no matter what I do, it's never going to be enough for her.
And the thing is, I think that the kids would take it, like, and understandably that the kids, like Sue and Lynn, would both, especially Lynn because of her attitude, would both take statements like that more seriously than Toph means them, if you know what I mean. Like, the Toph's not sitting there in her cave being like, I'm so disappointed in my girls. She's kind of just, like, flippantly like, yeah, you know that, like, you know, whatever. That she kind of says these things, you know, quite arrogantly, but that she doesn't mean them as, like, a full-on judgment, but you can understand why the children would take them as a full-on judgment.
Well, yeah, because they're being said by her mother.
Yeah, I know.
Obviously. You know, you're kind of a failure. It's fine.
I love you. You're not very good, but I love you. I don't know. Donya, something I've been thinking about on this rewatch is why the show, like, you know, this Nickelodeon show, you know, with these characters that were so, I guess, like, you know, loved, the original characters, Aang and Toph and everyone, so beloved, like, coming back, most of them, we've basically, you know, seen how flawed they are, like, a lot of, especially as parents. And, you know, we've heard about their, you know, great things that they've done and stuff. We've heard tons of, like, personal issues, and it's kind of like they brought back these characters that we, you know, loved or whatever, and that, you know, that were these sort of semi-innocent children characters, and then people are like, ooh, they turned out real shitty, actually. Why do you think the show chose to do something like that? Like, who gains, if you know what I mean, from showing the characters like that. Not that I don't, like, enjoy it as an adult, and I think it's totally plausible, but given the intended audience, like, on sort of rewatching, why do you think they did this?
Well, I mean, the thing that Avatar's always been really good at is balancing out, like, the good that a lot of characters do with the fact that they're not perfect and they do mess up. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that the positions that they got put into as a result of bringing down the Fire Lord through Avatar, you know, they have such a major responsibility to the world that, you know, a lot of the time their responsibility was there, you know, so it's, I guess it's just to show that, you know, while to the world they may have been everything, something had to be sacrificed in order for them to do the best that they could for the entire world. So, you know, I guess that's the way that I always looked at it. It's like, yeah, I think that's probably why they did it as well.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Like, I guess, you know, you newbies are allowed to have opinions. Like, do you guys have any thoughts?
Thanks.
I was sort of talking from a reflective point of view, but, like, even seeing this for the first time, you know, you're adults with the power to analyze things as opposed to, like, you know, small children watching the show. So, yeah, why do you think that they did this to the, you know, why do you think that they've interpreted the adult characters like this, you know, that they've shown us kind of these major flaws from the heroes from the past series? Deep personal flaws, not even like, oh, they made a mistake.
I think it's kind of to say that these kids need the adult influence in their lives, like the Korra kids, because, like, you know, you had Katara and Aang and Sokka and Toph, like, running around with no parents, and, like, then you have these authority figures in, like, Korra and Mako and Bolin's life being like, no, like, what we're doing, like, it will help you, like, because our parents didn't have anyone and they were kind of messed up, so, like, we should accept that, like, okay, yeah, like, they didn't turn out so well not having that kind of, like, structure or people trying to help them out in their lives, so maybe, like, we'll accept the adults a little bit more in this series, and it turns out they're the best part anyway, so who cares. But yeah. I think that is, like, saying something, like, maybe not directly or intentionally, but that's kind of what I'm getting from it.
Mm. I'm just wondering if it was disappointing to any kind of young people watching the show who were like, I love Aang, and then it's like, oh, Aang sucked, if you know what I mean. Like, so, I don't know, maybe they didn't think about it on that level.
Yeah, well, but I think that they should have, because the audience that would have watched Avatar would have grown up in the time before Korra came back, like, yeah, not a lot, true. But, like, would have come back to Korra, like, having an older mindset than when they watched Avatar, so that would be something that they would be picking up on.
Yeah. I suppose that's true.
That is interesting.
That is really interesting. Yeah, because I feel like there's like, the way you look at your parents changes so much over your lifetime. Like, when you're younger, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, I have the best mom ever. And then, you know, you turn into, like, a teenager and you're like, oh, my parents can't do anything right. You just see, like, their flaws. And then as you get older, you start to see them more as, like, human beings. Or,
yeah,
you know, you see that they try and they fail and,
like, people.
So, yeah, so I think the gang, I feel like that's really, it's really interesting that we've, you know, maybe they were great kids, that doesn't mean that they're perfect human beings, especially as parents.
Okay, so Korra still has the mercury in her system because she's, you know, Toph can't remove it or won't, or, you know, it can't force its way out of Korra's body. She kind of accuses Korra of, like, hanging on to it so she doesn't have to go back to being the Avatar, like, subconsciously. True? Untrue? Do you think this is a fair accusation?
I loved it.
Yes. I thought you would.
I loved everything Toph said in this episode because it was just, like, I felt like, yes, finally, fandom has said that. Yes. Or it's like, yes, that's what, like, Britney says every week. So
Yeah.
I know. I feel like I'm going to, like, there's just going to be a random uprising of listeners being like, can Brittany please be removed? She really doesn't like Cora.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I do like Cora, but she is definitely the worst avatar I've ever seen.
I don't know. Donya, I don't know if I've been on an episode with you in a while for Cora. Do you like her at this stage or not?
Cora.
Yeah.
I think
you like everyone.
it's true. I do end up liking, like, I like characters. Like, I may not always necessarily agree with them, but I like when we get characters, like, across the spectrum of, like, what they're capable of and what they're not capable of and that sort of thing. But I think I rewatched a lot of Cora in, like, huge chunks this time round. So, like, I watched all of season one in one go, and then I went straight into season two. Pretty much have watched entire seasons in one day this time round. Mm. And it really does change things, because you get to see the progression of the character a lot clearer when you watch, like, when I watch them all in, like, one massive go. And I don't know, like, the first time around when I watched it, I was very on the fence about Cora. And then the second time I watched Cora all the way through, I was kind of like, I'm still not sure if I love or hate her. And this time around, like, a third time rewatching, I'm like, yeah, no, you know what? I actually do quite like Cora, because I don't know, I just, the fact that she's not perfect and the fact that she really struggles and kind of shows that just having this inherent power from birth doesn't make you perfect. I just kind of like that.
That's kind of what I was thinking as well as you were speaking. It's kind of like a, it's kind of like showing that, like, oh, like, the Avatar power can happen to anyone, and this is what happens if you get someone that isn't intrinsically maybe attuned to it, if you know what I mean. And that, like, and I don't think the show made that aspect clear enough. If that's what was intended, I don't think the show was like, well, you know, oops, there was a bit of mistake. You know, Cora's not someone who would intrinsically be the Avatar, you know, in whatever way, but, you know, maybe it's a sign that anyone can learn, you know, to be it. But compared to a lot of the other avatars we've seen, even in their youth, it seems like she's, like, just not really the kind of person that the spirit chooses or whatever. So maybe, you know, we don't know if it's, like, completely, if it's in Rava's control, like, if she can see a person's, like, soul and, like, that's gonna be the next avatar or whatever. But, you know, there's gotta be a reason that Cora is the Avatar, you know, if it is an intentional thing. And if it's not an intentional thing, it's you know, it's an example of, yeah, here's what I'm trying to say. Sorry. If it is intentionally chosen by Rava, who's going to be the Avatar, and that Cora is the Avatar for a reason, it needs to be more clearly shown why Cora has what it takes. And we've kind of had 4.5 seasons of her stumbling and not really showing why she has what it takes. And if it's not intentionally chosen by Rava and it's just, this is who we got to deal with it, then I think that there may need to be more focus on why, you know, Cora isn't necessarily Avatar material and how to challenge that, basically. So I think the show didn't make it clear in one or the other direction. We just have to deal with her as she is. So that aspect I don't love, but they could have taken it one way or the other. So I don't know, which way would have you preferred? Like, kind of intentional choice of Cora or, oh, you know, threw a dice and this is what came up. Oops. Like, Cora.
I would like the intentional choice, because I think that would, I mean, it is intentional in real life. That's the character that the creators wanted to be the Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
And they chose, I mean, they wanted her like this because she's such a polar opposite from Aang. Yeah. So I can see why Rava would be like, you know what, now we need a different kind of Avatar for the world.
Maybe she wanted, you know, maybe she could see that all of Korra's mistakes would, like, make bigger things happen in the world, like the airbenders coming back and stuff like that.
But I mean, there's also, like, that whole, like, Rava has to know that there's going to be, like, those, like, what,
I guess not in Aang's case, but there's going to be that period of time where there's, like, you know, 12 years where they can't do anything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's
the youth.
Yeah. Because they're so tiny. Like, you're not going to have, like, a 4-year-old, like, when we first meet Korra. Like, that Korra is not going to be able to do anything, and we understand that. So, I don't know if she can, like, or if, like, Rava could see that far, you know what I mean? Like, because, yes, she, like, can pick who the Avatar is going to be, the type of people that are going to be surrounding her, but, like, it all comes down to, like, what the influences are, and I don't... It comes back to the original argument we kept having, like, well, is it because we're just giving Korra an excuse because she was kind of, like, you know, raised in, I don't want to say it's like she's an animal, but she's, like, raised in captivity, you know what I mean? Like, she wasn't allowed to interact with anyone, but then at this point, what's her excuse? I'm like, you've literally done everything and learned nothing, so that's why I think I'm so frustrated with her right now. And have been frustrated because everything that happens, she kind of hasn't learned from it. And Toph has a great line about that. She's like, how many of these people have you faced? And, like, you're not getting it.
So there's just a lot more, you know, really good Toph moments in this episode. Like when she, you know, tells Korra about looking through the tree system and says, you're more blind than I've ever been or whatever. And it's like sick burn. And all that kind of thing. But... so, you know, lots of really, really great moments, with her, and the way that she challenges Korra. But why do you think she lives in the swamp by herself? Like, what do you think drove her to do that? Like, you know, obviously her relationship with Lin isn't great, but, you know, she did used to visit Sue in Zhaofu all the time, and of course she probably doesn't want to live in someone else's domain. Like, she doesn't want to be like, oh, I'm just the grandma stuck in my door where the place where, like, my daughter is queen or whatever. But why the swamp and talking to no one? Any theories?
Well, she said that she can sort of, like, see everything in a way, and the swamp does have a lot of spiritual energy, so maybe she's kind of just, like, over everything and needs a break, because she doesn't seem to...
Maybe she's dead.
She might be dead.
She's a ghost.
Can't leave the swamp.
She's a spirit herself.
Like Iroh.
Did you ever see Toph as a particularly, like, spiritual person early on? Like, someone who wanted to go wander with
No, but, I mean, she did invent a whole new kind of bending. So, I sort of feel like she can do anything she puts her mind to.
Yeah, maybe she's, like, tired of, like, the hard earth. And she's like, the swamp feels good on my toes right now.
I believe that, she did just want to, you know, soak her feet in mud for a few hours, so, or days, or whatever it was, so yeah.
So, can she... The swamp is weird, because waterbenders can bend the swamp, but she can bend the swamp too?
Well, she's bending the mud.
Okay, so she's bending the mud, they bend, like, the plant.
What I don't get is how that she can tap into the spirit vines, because that's nothing... That's not a bending thing. That is... Unless she's doing it through kind of the sound vibrations. Like, her being able to use the vines all over the world, if you know what I'm saying, to see what's going on, that's not because she's an earthbender. I think that's more the power of the spirits, which is, I'm like, since when is Toph so, like, spiritually tuned in, if you know what I mean? So I'm not quite sure how that's meant to work. But, yeah. Would have liked to see some of the weird swamp benders again. So does this sort of personality of Toph match up to the one we saw in the Sue and Lin flashback when they were teenagers? Because to me, this one was more, you know, Toph as she was as a child, like as a 12-year-old, like the same kind of attitude that she had then and not the attitude that she had when she was the chief of police. Is that just what happens when you get old? You, like, stop caring and, like, regress back to your, like, most boisterous and, like, uncaring childhood self?
That's what I was thinking of, because I was like, you know what? She kind of seems like she has a little bit of dementia going on. Like, she's not all there.
Oh, my God. I don't know about that. Donya, how about you? Like, you know, because we've already seen her in the her, you know, young adult life as the mother. But how do you think she compares here to that?
I mean... I don't know. I just kind of thought that it was a good progression of her character. Like, there's still, like, huge, like, flashes of her personality, like, through everything. She's so recognizably the Toph that we knew from, like, her younger years, and there's still bits of her, like, that were in that flashback, and then here as well. So I didn't really see it as, like, a disconnect between every time that we've seen her.
I kind of did with the young adult flashback. I really kind of felt like she was, you know, that was less like the character that I knew than this version was. But you know, from my experience with old people, they stop giving a damn about things, so that might explain that. Okay, is there anything else anyone wants to ask or say about this episode before we do our scenes and quotes?
I'm so sad Sokka's dead.
Yeah, he is. Sorry. I'm really sorry that he's dead, but he is. What do you think he would add to the show if he was in it now?
Everything. He would add everything to the show. I mean, Sokka's so funny and so smart, and he brought out so much personality from Katara and from Toph, obviously, because she was, like, in love with him. Mm. But I really would like to see him in Katara. That's what I miss.
Okay. Favorite moments in the episode. Mine was actually a stupid one. It was Wu's Maul coronation, where he crowns himself king of Little Ba Sing Se, because he's just an idiot and I love him. And I just found it ridiculous and terrible and hilarious. Like, it's just such an absurd moment, and I just loved it. So there were lots of important moments. This was not an important one, but I found it amazing for some reason. So, Donya, yours was much more legit.
Yeah, my favourite scene was just Toph's revealing to Korra that there's still metal inside her body. Like, I just really like that scene. I don't know what it is about it. It's just her, like, flippantly, like, saying, you know, oh, well, the reason why is because of all that metal still in your body. And Korra's like, excuse me, what? Mm. Yeah.
Is Korra an idiot for not being able to know that herself? Or is it kind of, does Toph have, like, impossibly high sensitivity to Earth, and therefore, you know, she really would notice things that normal people legitimately wouldn't? Like, is it fair to call Korra an idiot for this, basically?
No, I don't think it's fair to call Korra an idiot for that, because if you think about it, Sue was the one who tried to get the metal out of her originally, and, you know, she didn't recognize that there were still traces of it left in her body, so then, what, is Sue also an idiot? Like, it's kind of that thing where it's like, I think Toph just has that innate ability to sense it more than anyone else.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there are really small trace amounts left that none of them were able to detect, I mean, Toph even makes the comment in this episode of, like, her girls never really picking it up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think by that, you know, by that merit of that, you know, that the end of that conversation about the girls not picking it up is really down to the fact that Toph it's not just, oh, not as good as me. It's that Toph, it comes from a different place with Toph. Like, her sensitivity is completely different to a normal person's, in a way that maybe she doesn't really, you know, empathize with other people. But I think that that's sort of what that is. Ariana, what was your scene?
My favorite scene was the one with Mako and Bolin, because I just always feel like this show and, like, Avatar before it has been really great about its sibling relationships, and I loved that, you know, Bolin shows up and Wu is like, oh, get rid of him, he's with her, and Mako is just like, he's my brother, and then shuts the door in Wu's face, and it's like, yay. And then, you know, he has his, like, real talk with Bolin. He's like, hey dude, you're being dumb. So I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. And Brittany?
Yeah, so mine was Mako explaining to Wu, like I kind of said earlier, about what Kuvira is actually up to, and then, like, not really having a strong enough defense to be like, she's like, you know, like, this is her plan and this is how you can see that it's bad. And he's basically like, you know, she's saving all these poor people and giving them like, you know, hope. And then he's like, well, I know that doesn't sound like terrible, but trust me, like, it's bad, because it just made me feel like, okay, Bolin is okay in this moment, even though Ariana disagrees that he should grow up. But I still think Bolin is okay. He just needs to, you know, take off his rose-colored glasses every now and then, and he'll be fine.
Okay, so quotes this week. My favorite line was actually one of Toph's, obviously, as she had many bold and brave and hilarious statements. But the main part was when she was talking about the spirit vines, when she said to Korra, like, I'm more connected to the world than you've ever been. And I'm like, what does that really say about the Avatar? That, like, some old lady can be more connected to the world?
She's throwing so much shade.
You've ever been? But I am very curious about how the, you know, the swamp vine spirit connection works, if it's just because Toph is, like, a super bender, or if it's, like, just a spirituality thing. But, yeah, I just loved all of the sick burns that she was throwing at Korra in this episode. Like, why has this woman not been training Korra since birth? Like, why, like... Why would, like, all of these influences?
Well, because,
like,
Toph is a little bit selfish,
you know,
too.
Zuko is a world leader. You know, Katara is a healer. You know, and Toph and even Tenzin and Lin. You know, the people in. I know that it's kind of hard. This is the first time, probably ever, that the next Avatar has been looked after by the people who were around the former Avatar. Like, that's not a thing that happened before, really, as far as I know. But seriously, why were these people, like Zuko and Toph, not involved in looking after this kid? Like, because, you know, if they all loved Aang and helped him, how have they let Korra get to this stage? Like, just how? Like, she's needed Toph's shade for her entire life. Like, come on, guys. So,
because the world doesn't need her one bit, Natalie.
Korra.
As Toph said.
The world
yes.
doesn't need Korra. Well, that's true. Maybe they're all like, we love Aang too much. No one else is going to be a good Avatar. We should get rid of the Avatar. This kid's going to kill herself sooner or later, so...
Well, also, like, that random, like... Oh, I think this might be in the next episode. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's in the next episode. Never mind, I'll save it.
Hmm. Okay, quote, Donya.
Mine was also Toph, which is when she says, well, I was planning on soaking my feet in mud for a few weeks, but I can't stand you being so pathetic and getting your butt kicked all the time. When Korra comes and she's like, help me.
Yeah.
And
true.
She's like, why do I suck so much?
Yeah. I think that Toph's brand of compassion is very good for Korra, and I think that it affects her more than entire whole seasons of other people trying to help her. So it really annoys me that no one thought to train this kid with Toph, but maybe Toph was just like, yeah, no. So.
I mean, if Toph wanted to, she would have. I just think she probably felt like she had better stuff to do.
True, I guess. That's true. All right, Ariana?
So mine was when Toph speaks for everyone, and she goes, pathetic. Of all the avatars I've worked with, you're by far the worst. I know that's only one other avatar, but still. So I was like, that's... Because I can just imagine everybody was complaining about, like, ugh, Korra's the worst avatar, she sucks, and I can imagine the creators being like, we've only had one other avatar, how can you say she's the worst avatar? But
and Brittany?
Mine was when they're trying to get the metal poison out of her, and Toph kind of gives up, and she's just like, when you want it out, you can bend it out. I can't deal with all your issues for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, Korra. Duh. Like, no one wants your pity party anymore. We're in book 4. You need to get a grip. Like, I mean, I felt, all right, that was a little harsh, because last week I did kind of come around to Korra's struggle because, like, yeah, she went through a lot at the end of book 3. But, like, now it's been 3 years. We can step it up a little bit.
She can stand on her own 2 feet at this point.
Yeah, literally, she can.
Out of the wheelchair, we're moving on. Okay. So we're up to chapter 4 now, and in this, The Calling, in this episode, Tenzin asks his three eldest children to search for Avatar Korra as he deals with Kavira episodes. Technically, he asks them at the very last scene of the former episode, but whatever. In somewhat of an homage to Atla, the three air kids venture around for a bit, getting to know the locals and finding themselves in rascally trouble. As Jinora fails to find Korra via meditation, Iki is teased enough to storm off again. Iki clearly had the whole situation handled and doesn't take kindly to being rescued by Jinora and an increasingly obnoxious Milo. With a lead to go to the foggy swamp to find Korra, the air kids happen upon the Avatar as she sends out a spirity tree message to them. Korra finds it in herself to metal bend the mercury out of her body, finally allowing her access to both... Finally allowing her to both access the Avatar state and to leave Toph the fuck alone. Seriously, what does the blind bandit have to do to get some peace and quiet from that nuisance of a Twinkle Toes? So that is basically what happened. The kids riding around on an air bison. It's just like old times. So Tenzin, you know, seems fine about sending his children off into the world. That's kind of... I mean,
sending his 8-year-olds off, like, they, yeah, sure.
They're not wrong.
And it's not even like he's going on a mission. He's listening to the president who, like, screwed them over before and is like, no, my place is here. Like, you're not even, like, going to do something cool.
Maybe he thought this was something, like, easy enough that they wouldn't get into trouble. It's not destroying the Fire Lord. It's like, just go find your friend Korra.
Yeah. So age-wise, the kids are, like, at this point, Milo is 9. Iki is like...
She's 11 12, and Jinora's 14.
Yeah, they're 12 and 15 or 11 and 14, something like that. So they're on the low end of the scale of what the gang was. Like, you know, Aang was kind of 10, 11 and Katara 14. And they've got Milo who's younger. So, I don't know, apparently this is an acceptable thing in the Avatar world to do. And, I mean, Jinora's relatively responsible. But, first of all, let's talk about kids now versus kids 3 years ago. Any of them that you like better now, like worse now? I think we can all agree that Milo is being terrible in a way that gets
I still
old
like
real
him.
Fast.
Oh, no.
I like all of them.
I didn't hate any of them. I actually liked Milo a lot.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't think he was annoying. I thought he was acting, like, you know, just... fine, especially when he has like that those like suave moves with the ladies.
Yes, that was cute.
And he still had like that like kind of Sokka like personality, like when he goes and gets the berries and he like refuses to admit that he was wrong. Like he's like, I'm clearly just doing this for you guys, like I'm fine. But like, you know, I thought that they were good. Like they grew up, but they still stuck to their personalities.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting to see Iki having like classic middle child syndrome here.
Yeah.
So that was pretty interesting.
I know Iki is sort of the focal point of the episode, but even without that, even if she hadn't had that whole plot of the guards, I kind of like her development the most. Like, Jinora I really liked in the opening episode, like with her and Kai, but her with her siblings I didn't love in this episode, and Milo I didn't love either. I think mainly because, like, I don't know, he kind of spoke like he was still kind of a 5-year-old, but he...
Milo is not annoying.
Yes, he is. And he's misogynistic. He's really...
He's like... How old is he?
No excuse. He's raised by a lot of strong women.
How is he being misogynistic?
Yeah.
What did he do?
But just for being like, I'm not listening to any girls. I'm the man. I am not, you know...
That's
like,
a brother sister. That's just thing. A... Yeah, that's
nah,
just a
nah,
thing
not
little
acceptable.
Boys do.
Not acceptable.
Oh, he's 9, and
so
he's with
what?
His sisters.
So
brothers are assholes to their sisters. Also, okay, like, the girls are probably sitting there going, like, no, we're not listening to you. You're just a dumb boy.
Yeah, I know they're not, like, complying to it, like, but it still annoyed me that he would have that attitude, even in the circumstance that he's grown up in. I thought it was not okay. And Jinora's kind of crotchety and, like, you know, probably PMSing and stuff, so... you know,
she's a teenager.
Okay, yeah, now you're being misogynistic.
Yeah,
how can you say she's PMSing?
Maybe she's
Natalie.
Not. I don't think that's a misogynistic thing to say. But regardless, I just thought the difference with her with the kids was very different to the, like, different to the, like, 14-year-old Janora looking after Iki and Milo or having to deal with them seemed really different to, like, Janora hanging out with, like, Opal and Kai in the first couple of episodes of this
season.
Well,
yes, because she's a teenager and they're teenagers and she's dealing with these little kids. She has to babysit them as she has to travel around the world. And she's probably like, you know, this would go up a lot faster if they were gone, which is probably true.
Yeah, and she was probably getting frustrated that her magic powers that she's come to be so proud of were not working either.
As the eldest, I sympathize with Janora's plight here.
Okay.
I agree. I would not want to take my little brother on a mission of such importance.
Yeah. I kind of don't know why they didn't just send the two girls and leave Milo at home with his mother, like, to, you know.
Because Tenzin is smart. He wants them to bond, so they'll be friends forever. This is a very, like, Kardashian move. And it's really smart.
Like, this is also him learning from Aang. Like, if he just sent Janora, that would clearly be the same exact thing that Aang did with him against Bumi and Kaya.
Yeah, that's true.
So he kind of has to send all three of them together.
Yes.
Yeah, good job, Tenzin.
What about that one baby that they had that's, like, so far apart from...
Oh, who cares about the baby?
The baby's, like, 3 years old now. Like.
I know, but, like, it's going to have this... It's going to be, like, super spoiled and, like, the most important thing of, like, another generation. So, anyway. Okay, so we've got... they're riding around on Janora's bison, which is called Pepper. Milo has his little flirtation in the village. Is he old enough to have a love interest? Is it weird to watch a 9-year-old do this? I'm not sure.
Oh, I thought it was cute.
No, it's cute. It wasn't, like, meant to last.
It wasn't meant to be. And then Janora keeps desperately trying to meditate and depend on her, like, spiritual connection to Korra. Is she just able to do this with anyone? Like, is Janora just super spiritual and she can tap into anyone? Or does her and Korra have a special bond? Is that sort of ever clarified?
No, I think it's more like Korra's just like
a
very
force of energy.
Yeah, she has like a different type of energy about her that, you know, Janora can pick up on. But I think like if she probably knows what, like, let's say what like Tenzin's energy feels like, you know, like so she can like tap into different people. But I don't think if they were just like, she's not like a police dog where they can be like, here's someone's scarf, can you find their spirit? Like, yeah. I don't think she'd do that.
Okay, and why do you think that she can't tap into Korra while Korra's in the swamp? Is it because of the swamp protecting her? Is it the mercury? Is it, like, Korra's mental state? Like, what is stopping the spirit going out?
She's not connected with the Avatar spirit right now.
Okay. I mean, she's still the Avatar.
But she can't tap into it because otherwise we wouldn't be having this problem.
Yeah, true. But, like, is that the thing that Janora is able to track? Like, Rava, like, the Avatar state, I guess. Like, does she only find Korra when Korra's in the Avatar state?
No, but I think it's stronger when Korra has a clear connection to the Avatar. Like, right now, something's blocked. Like, one of her chakras...
Yeah, I was gonna say, this is about chakras, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I just keep thinking about that. Also,
I feel like you bring those up all the time, Brittany.
Chakras.
I really like it. I think it's such a thing.
Yeah, I loved the chakra episode.
This photo online on, like, you know, because I run the Tumblr, so I follow a lot of Avatar blogs. And there's this photo of, like, someone meditating, and it's like, unlock your chakras, but they're chakras, and it's just Shaq's head stacked 7 times. And one of the captions was like, no wonder Aang had such a problem with this.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
Okay.
Go on.
So, what do we think, I guess, of the little airbender Batman flying squirrel suits? Like, you know.
I'm obsessed with them. I talked about them last week. I think they're fantastic. Yeah. I want one.
It's like, technology, yeah, we've advanced. So now they can, like, glide around without gliders, basically, and keep their hands free. That's pretty cool. I think I'd be really scared of being an airbender. I don't feel like I'd be confident getting off the ground. But yeah, they tend to do that a lot. So that's a fun kind of imagery thing. So group splits up. Iki is obviously quite annoyed at the others for, you know, both of their behaviors she has grievances with, and ends up sort of accidentally getting captured by a Kavira army outpost by these two dudes, and who have found the food. Milo, throwing the food in the river, how can you like him? Like, what a freaking idiot. Like,
but if Sokka did this, we would be like, oh, Sokka, so funny.
Well, no, because no, I wouldn't. I don't think so. Number one, Sokka was 15, so he wouldn't be so stupid to waste food.
Yeah, but, yeah, okay, well, maybe not the exact thing, but Sokka's done some pretty stupid stuff, and we've been like, okay, it's fine.
I don't know.
He's just a kid.
I don't know if it's comparable. Anyway, I'm not saying, like, oh, you're unforgivable and you're going to be the worst character forever, but, like, I found this as annoying or more annoying than Ikki did, possibly. And I think that throwing away the food is pretty bad, but... so he does that. Jinora's, you know, Ikki is, you know, unrealistic about what Jinora's powers can do, but Jinora's annoyed as well. They all split up. Ikki gets captured and finds these guards who happen to have her food, and she manages to, like, totally play them to the point where she got herself set free, and then her brother and sister did come and get her at the last moment, which is nice, I suppose. How did we feel about that entire, you know, Ikki-centric plot, I guess, and, like, the way she kind of played those guards? Do you think it was, like, intentional, or did you think that she didn't know what she was getting out of them? Like, was she just like, oh, this is cool, or was it kind of crafty, if you know what I mean?
At first I thought it was, like, a little weird, like, and she really didn't know what she was getting into until... Jinora and Milo come in, and she's just like, oh, like, she's frustrated because clearly she wasn't tied enough to the chair, and she knew that because she just, like, moves her arms out to look at the map and, like, kind of gets an idea of what's going on, and then she just jumps out of it. Like, so she probably could have gotten away whenever she wanted to. But I think she, and, like, it was an equal amount of, like, I kind of want to just get some of this, like, stress off of my chest and you people are listening to me. And half of it then was like, oh, actually, you might be able to help me.
You guys have maps and, like, can show me things and, like,
yeah, exactly.
Got my food and stuff like
so,
that.
So I don't think it was intentional when she first got captured, but then she was like, well, I'm not going anywhere. Let me see what these guys know.
She totally Black Widowed them.
No, she reminds me a little bit of Ty Lee as well. A little bit.
yeah.
And so, yeah, I wonder if she, you know, spent a lot of time with Auntie Ty Lee, you know, Aunt Azula's girlfriend, Ty Lee, while in the time when she was growing up or something like that, because, I don't know, there's a little bit of that aspect to it that I really liked it. So Pema sent a nice care package, which the guards seemed to appreciate, with her handwritten notes about being a very special little man, etc., which is sweet. So they get out of that whole situation with the clue to go, you know, to the swamp, basically, because, you know, Ikki discovers that, you know, everywhere's got outposts of Kavira, that the Avatar would have been reported, any of them, you know, they're quite happy to tell Ikki this, and that the swamp is unmanned by Kavira, so people haven't checked there, so Ikki's like, oh, she's probably there. Wanted to ask about the guards as well. Do you guys think that the guards are kind of, like, idiots for telling her this, or do you think that they're, you know, obviously there's those moments of, like, personal, like, oh, it's gonna suck because we're not there and we've got this shitty posting, but the information that they were giving Ikki, do you think that it was actually, you know, oh my god, we're so stupid and we've released classified information, or do you think that they were helping her because their goals were not conflicting? Like, do you think that Kavira cared about where Korra was or anything like that, or, you know, that the guards, that this was something that they were, you know, it didn't actually matter to their...
Wait, that they knew where Korra was?
No. Okay. Sorry. That was...
Sorry, I got lost in the middle
of
that.
No, so did I. I'm so sorry.
I had no idea what was going on.
Okay. So the guards were very kind of happy to help Ikki out and be like, oh, you know, in her mission to find the Avatar. They were like, you know, oh, don't, you know... I can tell you that, you know, if they'd seen her, you know, it would have been reported, so we know it's not here and here and here. They're very happy to help her. Do you think that that's just because they're kind of idiots that get sucked into Ikki's plight? Or do you think that it's because, genuinely, the Avatar where the Avatar is doesn't matter to Kavira, so it's not like they're revealing classified information?
No, they have a side conversation about it. About if they do help her and they capture her and Tenzin's kids, then
like, it, then they'll be able to bring them back, and, like, then they have some leverage in order to get their positions moved. So they don't necessarily want to, like, you know, they're not giving anything away in a sense, but if they could get all three of the kids, and they're the kids of Tenzin, this leader, like, they know that they're going to have some leverage somewhere down the line to get put on a better position, and if they find the Avatar, that's even better.
I suppose, but I don't know, I'm still a bit stuck on it about what, you know, whether that matters to Kavira or not. Obviously, Tenzin is kind of a world leader and that there's leverage there, but if I was those guards, I wouldn't have necessarily given Iki true information. I would have pretended to help her, but not actually helped her, and they did actually give her logical help. So, anyway, moving on from that. Before they got captured, they visited the same guy that took Korra and Aang's pictures visiting the fish stand, which was really cute little moment. So that they got the kind of the lead that she'd been in that area 6 months ago. After they're at the guard station, you know, Iki directs them to the swamp because it, you know, by process of elimination, that is really likely where Korra will be because it's everywhere else she would have been reported. Do you think that Jinora and Milo are too quick to dismiss this? Or do you think that there's, like, that Jinora's reasoning that, like, I can't feel her here. Like, so even though, you know, it might have made sense, I don't think that this is actually a thing. Do you think that that's fair of her, given her powers, or do you think it's sort of unreasonable?
I think she just doesn't want to go to the swamp because it probably smells bad and looks gross. So I wouldn't want to go.
There's that, I suppose. But do you think Jinora is too sure of her own powers? Like, do you think she has reason to doubt them, or do you think it's a fair assumption?
I mean, I think she has a pretty good grasp on them at this point. She has been using them, and she's seen how far she can go, especially, like, when she had to go through, like, you know, to find the airbenders in the prison and stuff like that. Like, she's, like, pretty confident. And if she is entering, like, she's probably, when she's meditating, I'm pretty sure she's, like, talking to spirits somewhere.
Yeah.
Being like, hey, guys, have you sensed anything? Have you seen anything? Like, how far do you go? Blah, 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 to all these people. So, I mean, I trust her. I don't think she's, like, purposely just being like, I don't want to go there, but at the same time I think that she's not being cocky, you know.
Yeah, I don't know about that. In other news, the swamp isn't having none of that shit because it pulls them back in this. It draws the air bison in just like when the gang wanted to pass it up, so the swamp knows what the swamp needs, which is interesting, and a nice little parallel again. But yeah, so they're there stuck in the swamp basically, and you know, even when they're there, you know, Jinora and Mila are like, oh, I don't think Korra's here. I'm like, bitch, you've been looking for like 5 minutes. Like, keep trying. But they have their kind of while they're doing their thing in one end of the swamp, you know, Toph and Korra are doing their thing on the other end of the swamp with the, you know, the vines, and then finally it's like Jinora picks up the phone, if you know what I mean. She's had no cell reception and she gets a few bars back. And so she connects with Korra and realizes that she is actually there. And then they fly to meet them and they have a big reunion. And we find out that, you know, Toph and Aang's, you know, Aang's grandchildren have never met. And it's like, why? Like, do they not have, like, family Christmases together or something like that? Like, what the
of
hell?
Of course,
like,
they had. Okay, well, we know that, like, obviously Toph's kids and Aang's kids hung out because Tenzin and Lin dated since they were, like, babies.
Yeah.
So why have they... I don't understand the grandkids thing. Although I guess then Toph, like, left.
Yeah. Maybe she saw them when they were babies and she left, like, 10 years ago or, you know, how long it was and she didn't really know them. So, I don't know. It all ends well, basically, which is... But because she connects to the airbender kids, she is able to...
They were almost her grandkids. I just thought of that right now.
How come?
They were... Because if he had married Lin, then they would be her grandbabies, the little air babies.
Oh, that's true. So close. Oh, no.
Oh, well. At least Pema's a good mother.
Yeah, she does have nice little packages of food. Do you think that she should have come on this trip with them and just, like, supervised them? Like, not power-wise,
no.
But, like, children-wise, if you know what I mean. Like, be like, kids, no. Don't fight, you know, gave them a smack around the head or whatever.
Also, kids always fight more when their parents are around.
That's true.
Than they do when That's they're really not, true. So, no. She's useless. She's not going to help them.
Okay. So, before they get there, I just want to go back to a bit of what Toph and Cora were doing together, which is the bit where Toph sends Cora off into the swamp to quote-unquote gather mushrooms, but she actually sends her to, like, the spirit mist magical vision place. And Cora witnesses, like, all her past traumas that she's been through, if you know what I mean. And that, I think, Brittany, that's what you're mentioning in the previous episode as well. About Brittany. You're the Avatar now, Brittany.
Yes, finally. Things are about to change, guys. Things are about to change.
Yeah, about Cora, like, witnessing those past, you know, battles that have traumatized her, and Toph talking about, you know, what she learned from them or what the people wanted that was good.
Which episode we were talking about?
It was this episode. So, yeah, what did you want to kind of talk about there?
Well, just, like, my biggest frustrations with Cora are the things that Cora is ignoring about herself. Like, she's sort of like, okay, I'm done, what's next? But not learning from anything that she's been through. Like, she hasn't learned that, like, people stand for things and they may be misguided and they're going to have a following and it's your job to, like, find a middle ground. But when they get too aggressive, you have to stop them. And it is your responsibility. Like, you can't just, like, not attend to it. And then you do have to process it and move on. But she's just sort of been, like, thrown in at the end of everything because she doesn't want to do the work. And I think that's her biggest problem, is that she needs to start doing the work. Like, when she opens the spirit portal, she's just like, okay, I don't want to deal with this afterwards. And she's just like, the spirit portals are open, everybody for themselves.
God, she's the ultimate lazy Avatar.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, it's, like, frustrating as a viewer coming from, like, yeah, there was this other Avatar who didn't want to do anything either, but he did it, and then he kind of, like, you know, built this world after that, and he was only, like, what, 15 when that show ended? So, like, he had to start leading right away. It's not like you're like, well, there are these other leaders, everyone can sort of, like, manage without me. And that's not the case. Like, we have that guy there in the Earth Kingdom this week who's like, they're like, have you seen this Avatar? And they're like, oh, we still have one of those? Like,
yeah, right.
Well, just getting used to you not being around, and that's not how it should be. Mm. So that moment, I was just, like, you know, clapping my hands and being like, yes, finally. Like, someone else, like, the creators of the show are seeing that she needs to face this, and Toph is the perfect person to make her realize that.
Yeah, one thing I really like about Toph's, like, kind of quote-unquote, like, teaching moments are that, like, you know, Cora can't be told things. It's like she still hasn't kind of learnt that, you know, she still hasn't kind of accepted straight-up guidance, some advice being given to her face. And so Toph does a lot of kind of tricking her and, like, I was going to do this, but I guess we'll fight, you know, whatever. And, you know, or like, oh, go get me some mushrooms. Oops, you fell into a spirit vision that you needed to have, if you know what I mean. And I think this tactic is very good for handling Cora. So, again, I don't know why this woman has not been, like, her main guru for her entire life, basically. But never mind. Okay, so sort of that all ends okay, and they get to hug at the end, and then they take Cora back with the kids take Cora back with them, and Toph is like, get the hell out of my swamp, don't talk to me ever again, which, you know, it might be fair. I feel like
she really say that? I don't remember.
No, she didn't. She just kind of walked off, but it wasn't like a sad, oh, that was nice to have people here in Narmoyne. It was like, thank God they're gone, kind of. Like, it was kind of a very, she was not,
Toph is so bizarre.
Yeah, she was not bummed by them leaving or anything. She was like, yep, good, okay, we're done. Not like good riddance, but you know, if it was a more emotional person, there would have been this little moment of like, oh, sigh. There was no little sigh or anything like that. So, yeah.
I wish she had gone off with them. I wish she had hopped on that bison and be like, you know what? I think I'm going to go visit.
Gonna fly back in and kick some ass or something.
I miss Zuko. I don't miss Katara, but
that's probably what she's like. In the two episodes that we saw, there were also a lot of, like, fights, you know, of Toph and, well, not a lot, but an amount of battles, I guess, between, or training, or whatever you want to call it, between Toph and Korra, where Toph just, like, throws Korra all around. And how did you see, you know, feeling Toph bend, you know, mud bend or whatever it was, as an old lady, like, the way that, you know, she still has that tactic of, like, she's, like, obviously not looking at anything, the way that she, like, looks straight ahead and can feel things to the side without turning her head to acknowledge it and stuff like that. Like, how did you guys feel about seeing her bend again and fight again?
I just wish she was fighting someone other than Korra, because it would have been more impressive. Like, because, you know, like, we've already seen Korra try and fight since this all has happened, and so it was just kind of like, oh, we're wasting Toph bending on Korra.
Mm. Donya, how about you?
Sorry, what? Sorry, okay? I'm... Yeah, it just got late. I'm sorry, I dozed off.
Oh my god. Thanks.
Sorry.
No, we was talking about watching Toph as
Donya
an old...
Donya literally fell asleep during the podcast.
Wow, we was talking about Toph. Are you in bed or something?
Yeah.
Oh, I would never do that, because, no, I have to sit upright and actually be engaged, otherwise I get too distracted. So that you failed yourself there, Donya. No, what was I going to say, we were talking about Toph bending as an old lady, like, watching her fight with Korra and, like, the, you know, the way that she still moves and the way that, you know, her face still is when she's bending and stuff like that as an old lady, and how what you thought about it.
It's awesome. That's what I thought about it. That Toph is still as completely and utterly badass and kick-ass as she was when she was a kid. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Also, like, remember, guys, when Bumi was really old and he could bend like a, like, really awesome person?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of Bumi, where is he? Because I'm going a little crazy. It's been 4 episodes. I'm assuming he started up his own spirit nation somewhere and just got distracted and, like, accidentally got himself, like, pronounced king of a small island, and he's stuck there.
Do you know who Bumi reminds me of? Have you guys... This is going to be really weird, but have you guys ever read or seen the Pippi Longstocking books? Or the film?
Yeah.
About the 90s? Yeah. He reminds me of Pippi Longstocking's weird father. Anyway.
Oh my god.
Brittany, let me give you something to keep you going. The squirrel glider suits?
Mm-hmm.
Bumi has one.
Okay. So he's just... He got stuck on a tree somewhere.
So you're... Yeah, so you can get excited about seeing him in some form-fitting lycra sometime
soon. I do know that he lost a lot of weight because I've accidentally seen a photo. But other than that...
Photo.
A photo, like a paparazzi shot. This is what I feel like when I'm on Tumblr. I'm like, oh my gosh, these paparazzi photos of Korra, I can't handle it.
Oh god. Okay, where were we? Toph, Bumi, old ladies. She was very gleeful about, like, how good she was, which is very Toph as well. So yeah, so I guess if anyone... did anyone have any points about this final episode that we watched, you know, about the kids or about Korra's vision quest or whatever is going on?
I just hope Korra gets better and Asami comes back and, like, everyone is out of their dead-end jobs, because this is getting old and it's the last season and I'm nervous that I'm going to be like, oh, what a letdown.
Those last 4 seasons.
Wow.
I mean, book 3 was much better than book 2, but I think it was only because book 2 is so bad. So now I'm, like, second-guessing whether book 3 was good or not.
Book 3 was good because it was, like, the beginning. Yeah. Everyone had so much potential and they were utilizing it. And in this book, it's like, what happened to all that potential? Oh, maybe it was not there to begin with. Mm. But... I just thought right now how this behavior Toph has, she reminds me a lot of Korra, or Korra reminds me a lot of Toph, but I think the difference between Korra and Toph is a lot of the difference between, like, why I hate Kuvira, but, like, really like some other villains, and it's that I feel like Toph, you know, like, owns that she's a little bit terrible. She's like, yeah, I'm, you know, she's a straight shooter and she's funny about it and she says what she wants. And Cora just demands what she wants.
Yeah,
but she doesn't deserve it, really.
Yeah, she's kind of like if she goes to Toph and she's like, fix me. Not even like, you know, teach me. Or
and Toph is like, fix yourself.
I think the difference with Toph and Cora on that note is that there's a difference between people who say what they want and don't care what people think about it. They just say what they want. And if people like it or don't like it, it is whatever to them, which is like Toph. And then Cora, who says what she wants, and she's like, I'm saying what I want, and you should all listen to it, if you know what I mean. Like, even if it's not good. Like, you know, there's a difference between saying what you want because you think everyone needs to listen to you and the other people shouldn't say what they want because people don't need to listen to them, and just saying what you want because you don't care. And I think Toph is the latter, basically, and Cora is the former. So,
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, favorite scenes in this episode. Mine, of the ones that we haven't already talked about, was actually the little moment when Iki and Milo are going around the town and Milo's like, you can hold this drawing I made, and then it shows that, like, he's done this amazing drawing.
It was, like, beautiful.
Laura and Iki's like, I didn't know you could draw. And this is, like, really stupid and gaggy, but it's just, like, if you want to take it deeper, it's just, like, interesting that, like, you know, different people have, like, different little talents that you don't know about, especially compared to all of those, you know, running gags in Atla with, like, Sokka holding up the terrible drawings that he's done of, like, look, I drew a picture of...
And, like, oh, Bolin's beautiful, like, language next to, like, his, like, stick figure of Varric, yeah. You know?
Yeah, and so, yeah, and so I found it really interesting that Milo is actually relatively talented at drawing, and I can tell you that this is a gag that will come up again in a way that really amuses me. So, yeah, that was my favourite moment of the episode. And, yeah, let's go down the list. So, Donya, what was yours?
Mine was just Toph meeting the Airbender kids for the first time. I just thought it was really funny, especially the first Milo bit. Milo realising who she is.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was great fun.
Yeah. And Brittany?
Mine was Toph recalling her adventures, with the gang, like, that whole scene, because she was just sort of like, eh, yeah, it happened. But also the macaroon guy, because he just really wanted people to have a macaroon.
Yeah. And Ariana?
Mine was just, I really enjoyed getting to, I got so excited last episode at the end where he was like, you three are going off. I was like, yes, it's just like Avatar, yay! And I was so excited, and I loved them. I even loved all their fighting and their bickering. I was like, this is love. This is love, so, yes.
Okay, good. So, favorite specific quotes, mine was actually, when they were charging around the first time, town, and Milo was, kind of trying to boss the girls around, and they're not really listening to him, but Iki, who's an optimist, is Jinora, like, remember when he used to be so nice and sweet? And I'm thinking the same thing that Jinora's saying, which is she just goes, no, because Milo has always been relatively obnoxious, whether you love him or hate it for him, but I just found that great. So yeah, Donya, your quote?
Mine's also a Milo quote. It's basically when he's like, wait a minute, cranky, old, blind, you must be Toph. And then Toph is like, oh, I like this one.
Oh, maybe they should leave him there with her to learn some life lessons or something like that.
Or he'd get a lot worse.
Yeah, that's true. Brittany has the best line of the entire episode, though. So.
Well, there were two, and I wanted to, I was, like, this whole scene was just my favorite thing, but when,
Cora
is like, hey, so, like, what was it like, you know, when you were teaching Aang how to earthbend? And this is, like, the perfect synopsis of that entire episode. It's like, what's to tell? I threw some rocks at the Avatar, he got all whiny, and Sokka fell in a hole. And, like, I was just like, oh my gosh, that's right, this was the episode where Sokka got stuck in the hole.
You know, he's not gonna be meeting sarcasm guy anymore. Strictly veggies and straight talk, man. You know?
Yeah, so I put a gif in our doc of Sokka in the hole. And then the Fire Lord thing was good too, but...
Okay, Ariana, did you have a quote for this episode?
Yes, my favorite quote was when Iki showed up and saw Korra and goes, "I love your hair." So that's was my reaction to this season.
Yeah. And who goes, "I love your hair"?
Iki does.
Oh, when she says that to Korra.
Yes.
Yes.
I
how
also
do we
love
like Korra's
hair.
Korra's nifty shaggy bob. We like her.
Oh, obsessed with it.
Yeah.
So obsessed. So I love her new outfit. I love that she got rid of those terrible ugly pants and that horrid like fur thing that she always had wrapped around her waist.
Butt skirt thing. Yeah. Look, it was traditional, you know, water tribe dress, but.
Okay, she was wearing those furs, like, in the dead of summer in Republic City, like...
She's the Avatar. She should wear, like, a neutral color, not, like, the color of where she comes from. I mean, I don't know why everyone has to wear the colors
where
all
the airbending stuff, so...
Yeah, he did, I suppose. Whatever. Anyway, yeah, she's cool. She, you know, she could wear purple or something. Purple's good for everyone, right? Like, or white. I don't know. Anyway, I do like the hair. I'm really impressed with everyone's hair this season, so... Except Bolin's. Bolin's is dumb. Marco's is great. Cora's great.
Marco's sexy hair.
Okay. All right. So are we done with this one? We've got feedback. We've got our contact info, and then we'll finish
up. Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. All right, let's go. Contact, if you have got anything to say to us about what we've just been talking about, feel free to reach out on our email address, which is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Twitter re_watchable. We have this post on Hyperball where the podcast lives. You can leave comments on the Discus comment function there, or you can join us on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also leave us a review on iTunes, which is really great and helps keep the podcast looking super legit. If you don't rate us 5 stars, then Natalie, that's me, will ensure that you learn all your life lessons in the most curmudgeonly and unpleasant means possible. Thanks. Is that a personal judgment or just a reference to the episode? I mean, Mitch wrote this doc and he's been podcasting with me for a very long time, and he knows my ability to talk people out of their opinions on occasion. So, look, there's a lot of people in the Glee fandom who have some opinions that I don't agree with, and we've had some times. But no, I think that I'm a more benevolent dictator these days, so we'll see. I'm better than Kavira, at least. Listener feedback. We've got some tweets, we've got an iTunes review and a Hyperball comment. I'll read the comment and then we'll all read a tweet or something. So, Hyperball comment, okay, I'm going to butcher this.
No, I know how.
Okay,
Ariana. I had to say the name because he told us how.
Go on.
So he said his name is Carl Chakumeni.
Chakumeni.
That's what he said in the Hyperball
doc
last week.
All right, got it. Okay, Carl Chakumeni. Hello, girls. Thanks for the podcast. Each time we saw an avatar, quote-unquote, flying into the avatar state, he or she is either using an airbending sphere or tornado or a firebending jetpack, or they're simply jumping. That one time in the Book 2 finale where Aang is quietly ascending from the ground is very similar to what Zaheer performed, even in the way that they accessed to that power, like let go of your earthly tether, which was very much the chakras thing. I guess this is in response to a discussion in the finale episode, which I wasn't on. Were any of you guys in that?
Yeah, so, I mean, this was one of those things where it was like, I'm not going to go back and look it up, so I trust that you are correct, Carl, and went back and looked at everything, because... But the basic thing was like,
yeah, what were you questioning?
if you're in the avatar state, are you able to fly?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, sure, I think so. And I guess I'm wrong, but that's okay. Yeah. That's cool.
No, but you can fly because Aang
flew. Are they using airbending? Is the thing?
Oh, I just think
like
they're being
is there like you know
avatar-y?
Yeah, is it animated to show that like you know they're using a tornado or like you know
are they like on top of a stuff? Airbender ball
yeah.
or something, or are they just their body is just
or are they working? Actually just doing it?
Yeah. Good point. I don't know. All right. So oh god. Okay. So we're gonna do some quotes. Ariana, why don't you take the first one?
Yes, sorry.
Okay, so from Twitter, from Kimberly Hainer at Kimber Power, she says, I just listened to Hamilton for the first time on Thursday and have obsessed over it since. I'm with you guys. Yay, Kimberly. Vibe.
How lucky
Yay.
We are to be alive right now.
I don't think there's a day when I haven't listened to the Hamilton
soundtrack. Yeah, so what, when did we see it, Brittany? 16th of September?
Yeah, it was around that time.
It's now the 1st of November for me. So I guess that's been 6 weeks. I have listened to no other music since then. I have listened to the show in full several times a day, or I'll have an act, you know, I'll put on an act and then, you know, listen to the second act the next day, including the new album. I have not listened to the new album of my favorite band in the world, who have put out their first album in 11 years after a really emotional reunion. I have not sat down and listened to that yet because I can't commit my brain to the emotion of the music that it's going to need because it's too busy only caring about Hamilton. So that's where I'm at right now.
And where the Hypeable staff is at right now is that if one person talks about Hamilton, like every person who likes Hamilton gets like 35 to like 37 notifications out.
Oh, yes.
Because everyone who like, it's unbelievable. One person will like, this started the other day. One person like tweeted a quote from Hamilton. I replied, and then Karen jumped in, and then everybody jumped in, and then it got to a point where it's like, well, we have to tag Adiana at this point, and it's just like everything. It was just like so many notifications. It's unbelievable.
And I don't want to like get too specific before everything's in the bag, but if you like Hamilton and you follow Hyperball, keep an eye on us in the next couple of weeks, because we do have some stuff that we're talking about specifically. That you can,
so that rewatchable can go back to being rewatchable.
Yeah, basically, so that we can get this all out somewhere. But yeah, oh, it's so good. It's so good, and I don't like. It is a really great show for musical theatre fans or people who are just getting into musical theatre who can't necessarily see the show in person because it's a sung through show, and it, you know, so much of like what the image.
Yeah,
is
I really think that stuff like 85. That. Like, I think that 85% of the show is what you're getting on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And, like, the rest of it, it just complements it.
And a lot of
Someone who won't be able to see it, I will vouch for that.
Eventually.
But you get... I hope so.
It's coming to London in 17.
Really? Yeah. How did I miss that announcement?
Because I'm insane and know literally everything about this show.
Do you know when are they touring? When do they start
touring?
That I don't
know. My opinion of this, we'll go into, we know that we're going to talk about this at a different point. My opinion of, given that what Lin wants from this show and given from the accessibility that he wants it to school students and stuff like that, I'm predicting that they end up doing at some point. I mean, they will tour, but a lot of productions in Britain, a lot of like National Theatre, you know, big production, you know, the National Theatre Company there and BFI, they do broadcasts, cinema broadcasts of live recordings of shows. It's not done in Broadway, but it's done in British theatre a lot. I've got a feeling they're going to end up doing that with Hamilton at some point, like an official live recording, like cinema screening version.
I watch a lot of those.
Yeah, it's common in Britain, and it's a thing to like fight bootlegging.
Yeah, I go to them here because they play them at the theaters here.
Yeah, like,
the National
Benedict Cumberbatch's Hamlet or whatever and stuff like that. And so the big, good quality productions, I think they did, like Catherine Tate and David Tennant's Much Ado About Nothing was released online through the app and stuff like that. So, you know, bootlegging in the theatre community is a very bad thing, and that people say it really ruins the experience, but you know, some theatre companies are combating that by, you know, doing a proper release themselves, especially a live cinema broadcast. And I feel like that the way that they want Hamilton to be accessible to people who, you know, will use it for education, I've got a feeling that something like that might end up happening. But anyway, it's really great, and it is really easy to get into even if you can't go to the theatre. That being said, this isn't like a down talk on like, you know, like, oh, anyone else who didn't do this doesn't count as, you know, liking it, but I personally, for my experience, I'm super glad that I saw it before the soundtrack came out, and then the soundtrack came out and I sort of had the live show. Like, I know that not everyone got that, but I'm really glad.
Karen and I got that was because we won the lottery by random chance the same night that Natalie had a ticket.
Yeah. So it was all very beautiful. It was really beautiful experience, but I love that, like, it's so, I love that just everyone gets how good it is, because it's just, anyway, let's move on from Hamilton. We literally Just wait, guys. We'll talk more about Hamilton at another point.
Just you wait.
Yeah.
Just you wait.
Seriously. Okay, so more related to this. Donya, do you want to take this next tweet from Shelley?
Yeah, of course I do. So Shelley says, so excited that Rewatchable is starting Chorus Season 4. So good.
As a newbie, as a super fan, Donya, sorry, do you like 3 or 4 better of Korra, Season 3, Season 4?
Oh, as a whole season, I think 3.
Yes, same. That's like, oh my god, this is going to be such a letdown. It's not. It's got a really good ending and stuff, but I just really love Zaheer, and I really love, like, what...
Yeah.
The character, like, Zaheer, I love the discovery of Sue and stuff in Season 3, so 3 is a whole season I really love. So hopefully 4 holds up for the newbies, but I do really love 3 as well.
I do really, I like 4 a lot, especially the latter half of 4.
Mm.
Like, I really enjoyed the latter half of Season 4, but as a whole season, I think 3.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, and Brittany, do you want to take this this final tweet from Tabitha?
Yeah, so Tabitha Harrison at It's Like You Know, the best Twitter handle in the world, says, it's literally impossible not to make blind jokes when Toph is in an episode, which is very true, because I catch myself, like, I think my brain subconsciously does it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll just be like, you know, she sees, and I'm like, I'm not actually trying to make a joke, but yeah, it's there.
Okay, and then we've got an iTunes review, I guess, which is nice. Like, someone actually, like, we've copied across. So from TX Rock Chalk Rachel says, TV fans unite. That's us. We're the TV fans. We're uniting. Beware of spoilers. If you've not seen the show, you may need to skip over a few episodes. But besides that, very entertaining. Well, thank you very much. And feel free, people, to contribute to iTunes if you want to, so that we, you know, people who don't necessarily know Hyperball, end up finding the podcast. So,
But also, if you have not seen the show, why are you listening to this podcast? That's a weird thing.
Yeah, if you're gonna watch,
definitely
the show,
watch the episode first.
Yeah, if you want to follow Rewatchable, you know, for whatever reason, or if you're looking to get into a show that we're doing, like if you've never seen Firefly and you want to listen to the Firefly podcast, watch the episode that we're gonna watch.
The episodes that are listed on our titles are the ones we are going to talk about.
Yeah.
And we will reference episodes past that we have seen.
Yeah. So it's just it's the same as, you know, any of our new podcasts, you know, where we're reviewing the new episode that's come out week by week, except we're doing a show that's already existed. So, you can follow along at the same rate, or you can binge watch a season and then listen to our episodes. But, spoilers, you know, we really try not to spoil for future episodes, like the super fans, but... You do need to watch the episodes that we've talked about. Yeah.
And if you haven't seen Avatar and you're listening to Korra, sorry.
Yeah, that's
spoiler,
strange.
Spoiler, we've seen Avatar.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay, until next week, we'll see you guys then, when Korra will hopefully be back to her duties as the Avatar and, you know, see all her friends and stuff. So until then, thank you for listening. And I am Natalie.
I'm Danya.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mariana.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.